Well, Nick, I had said to you earlier today that this stretch of games was going to be a make-or-break stretch, right? An eight-game homestand, a divisional opponent here at the Rogers Center, the team right ahead of you in the standings of the Astros coming to town on Monday for four games, Canada Day, always a big event down here in the city. And look, I don't know what the season holds when it comes to teardowns or being buyers, and things might largely depend on what happens between now and obviously the trade deadline, which is in about a month. But two things come to mind for me today. So one, certainly the offense is starting to really come around, which honestly seemed like unfathomable for most of the season. So that we are actually seeing them put better swings on the ball and more extra base hits and more home runs and just more fireworks, period, is always a good thing. And two, no matter where the Jays are at in their competitive cycle, it is always fun to watch them beat the Yankees at home. Like, it's so much fun. And today, it was a 9-3 Blue Jays win to guarantee a series split.
Yeah, fun is the operative word there, right? I think part of the problem that fans have had with this team all year long, yes, losing is a problem. Yes, falling short of expectations is a problem. But this is an entertainment product, and for much of the year, they have not been particularly entertaining. That's a reality. And so now you're looking at six straight games with five or more runs scored. They're 3-3 in those games. It's not like they're on a run necessarily, but they are showing the fans something. Nine runs in three of the last four games. That is a massive departure from what they were showing earlier in the season.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali, and you're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line is always open. You know, it's kind of hard not to start with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. after a game like he had today. A two-run bomb off Nestor Cortes Jr. in the bottom of the first inning, which, so before we get to the rest of what he did today, that gave him six home runs in his last eight games, and that alone, and he had, what, six RBI today? So multiple RBI in six consecutive games, which is actually a Blue Jays franchise record. So previously it was over multiple RBI in five consecutive games was held by Eric Hinsky and Frank the Cat, Frank Catalanato. And then, of course, after that, he clears the bases, a three-run double right down the line, and then an RBI single of all people, Clay Holmes, in the eighth inning. Holmes was just in there to get some work because he hadn't pitched in ages. But, boy, 19 RBI for Vladdy in his past six games. He is absolutely on one right now. And Sportsnet Stats, our crew led by Steve Fell and Nick, tweeted this out after the single in the bottom of the eighth inning. So most RBI in a six-game span in the history of the Blue Jays, okay? Edwin Encarnacion had 20 in August of 2015. Vladdy, right now, June of 2024. And the last person to do was Vladdy from July to August of 2019, also with 19. That is incredible.
Absolutely. And in this game, he showed you different things in those different at-bats. And the first, the home run you mentioned, you know, that's a ball to the right center power alley. Like, that's a part of the park where he hasn't necessarily found power all season long. Then there's the pitch that he absolutely golfs, barely off the ground, very much in the Vlad Sr. mold. And then he gets a hit off a truly elite pitcher in Clay Holmes. So throughout this game, we knew he was on a heater coming into this game. But here at Rogers Center, he really put on a show.
I almost feel like we have seen Vladdy, and this is by no means an original thought, because I know a lot of people said this on social media, but I almost feel like Vladdy, we have seen him hit so many balls so hard over the years, not just this year, but just over his entire Blue Jays career, which is not like that long, I suppose, but just right at guys, like absolutely punishing baseballs into like a guy whose back is to the outfield wall or a guy who is standing at short or at third and just blistering it right into the guy's glove. So it's kind of funny that the game that really kind of turned things here, or the play that really turned things in this game, was that bases clearing double, bases loaded, and just like a little chopper right up the line. Just to the, what, left, I suppose, or right, I guess he was facing the other way, but right of DJ LeMahieu, just up the line to clear the bases. It's so funny that we've seen so many of the complete opposite kinds of hits where he's just annihilating baseballs, and to see him kind of blow the game open on a hit like that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think he single-handedly has turned Blue Jays fans against the concept of exit velocity because people keep saying these readings like, oh, 110, 115, but he blasts it right at a shortstop or something like that, as you mentioned. Lady Luck has been on his side a little bit, but you can't fake all those home runs he's been hitting, and they, generally speaking, have not been wall scrapers either. So, yes, absolutely some good fortune in this game, but he is justifiably on a hot streak, and again, getting behind some of the home runs he's hit over this stretch, that's all skill.
The bases-clearing double was Vladdy's 150th career double. It was also his 800th career hit. So I guess the single off of Holmes was his 801st career hit. But he is the eighth fastest player in the history of the Blue Jays to reach that 800-hit milestone, doing so in 742 career games. So lots of milestones for Vladdy today, which is pretty cool. I want to get to a couple other guys before we get to the phones. And I'll let you pick, actually. You want to talk about IKF or you want to talk about Kirk?
I'd like to go Alejandro Kirk here,
right,
because there have not been a lot of opportunities to talk about Alejandro Kirk in positive terms. So Kirk brought four hits in June into this game in 39 trips to the plate. He got a couple here. They were both critical. And he also threw out multiple runners, and that had been a big weakness in his game coming into the season. Below 20%. Throwing out base runners, and the average in the league is generally kind of low 20s. He's over 30% now this season. I don't think he's suddenly developed a gun. I don't think he's suddenly found new mechanics that make him throw faster. If you look up his pop times, it's pretty similar to what he's done in the past, but the accuracy has been much better. You saw it especially on the second one. He's throwing the ball exactly where it needs to be for the infielder to make these tags. And this is an area of his game that has gone from weakness. I don't know if we're going all the way to strength, but he's really shored up.
The throw to gun down Ben Rice at third base. And then it was called safe initially, and then they reviewed it and it was out. Rice is cleat. There must have been like a speck of daylight between his cleat and the bag. That was crazy. But that they had the wherewithal to actually challenge that and get it. Because I feel like we've seen like more obvious plays be challenged and have them not get overturned. So that was overturned. There must have been some angle we didn't like see that really definitively showed. But phenomenal pop and throw from Kirk to get him. And then on the strike him out, throw him out, where he throws the runner out at second, I was very impressed because, like you said, that's not something we talk a lot about with Kirk. Maybe over the course of his whole career, I mean, I think he's been pretty good defensive framing and framing up pitches and so on. And that's something we've gotten used to. But holding runners, throwing out runners has never, I feel like, been something we've talked about a whole hell of a lot with Kirk. And then on top of that, you had two RBI on a double and a single. I got to say, I was very impressed with Kirk. And yeah, I mean, he's like never going to be a terror on the base paths. But I mean, I just feel like with Kirk, I think the reason I wanted to highlight him is because he has gotten a lot of criticism. I think some of it fair for sure, but you know, if like Danny Jansen leaves in free agency or if he gets traded, for example, like pretty much the only catcher you have in the system is Kirk, right? So for better or for worse, like he's going to be on this team. So it is nice that, you know, a guy who was an all-star catcher not that long ago, the starting all-star catcher for the American League a couple of seasons ago, it's pretty crazy that we are where we are now. But I got to say, I was very impressed by what we all saw from Kirk today because we haven't seen that too often.
Yeah, he's someone who's going to be on the team, as you mentioned, a little bit longer term than some of these other guys, potentially. And as frustrating as he's been to watch the plate, and he absolutely has been, like he has not generated any power whatsoever. He's declined in various ways at the plate. And this was just one game, and it wasn't even some massive game.
Right.
So I don't want to say that, you know, at the plate, he's back. You know, he's not doing what Vladdy's doing or anything like that. But he's a guy who's one of the best framers in the league. He's one of the best pitch blockers in the league as well. Now his throwing is coming around. You have the tools in place for him to be a very, very strong defensive catcher. And sometimes that's not the most beautiful thing to watch,
sure,
a defensive catcher who doesn't have a lot of power. But that is a valuable player. And I think it's likely that he's going to hit better in the second half of the season than he did in the first.
I also wanted to get to IKF with you because you and I are IKF experts at this point, you and I together. So 13-game hit streak, four hits for IKF today, including the third of which I believe drove home the fifth run of the game. He is now actually 7-for-11 in this series against his former ball club, and now has a 770 OPS on the season. He has been phenomenal. Like, we were talking about this in the pregame, but the idea of him, like, well outpacing the contract in terms of, like, value metrics on Fangraphs and so on, which I actually have not really paid a lot of attention to before, so that you said that to me in the pregame is absolutely incredible. But he has been, again, it's just, with IKF, you never get an AB, certainly this season, that you feel like you were left wanting more. Like, yeah, I mean, people swing at junk sometimes, but for the most part, it's a pretty consistent, mature experience whenever he's at the plate, and that's like it just on offense. We already kind of knew what he was going to give you on defense, right? Like, I think the work defensively has largely been exactly what you expected, but again, when it comes to exceeding expectations, he has like completely blown me away with what he's given you offensively.
Yeah, he does such a great job of spraying the ball around the park and putting it in play, and that can be a cliche, and some players, that description fits, but they can't make anything happen with those balls in play. Like, you think of Kirk for a lot of this year.
Sure,
it's not
yeah.
like he's striking out all the time, but he's just not making anything out of the balls in play. You know, Ernie Clement is another example of a guy who barely ever strikes out, but his balls in play aren't that impactful. And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, his balls in play are not immensely powerful. He's not going gap to gap all the time. He's not clearing the wall, though, as we talked about in the pregame show, he's well on his way to a career high in that regard. He is making those balls in play count. They're not dribblers. They're not rated guys. They're not pop-ups. He's hitting it through the infield. He's hitting line drives. He's not setting records for exit velocity. But today, according to StatCast, he had 4 hard-hit balls of 95 miles per hour or more. Like, again, he's not Vladdy, but that is significant. He's hitting the ball with authority, even if it isn't massive extra base power.
You like him at top of the order?
I think, two is a bit of a stretch. Two is where you generally want to put your very best hitter. Like, that's, as Blue Jays fans might recall, that's where Josh Donaldson was for this team for quite some time.
Yeah.
I think the best version of Blue Jays has, Vladdy rolling from that spot, or Bo, if he's doing well, coming in and hitting well in that spot. But realistically, they're scrapping for every game here. They're trying to stay in the race. And so he may not be their best hitter. He isn't their best hitter from a talent perspective. But in terms of production right now, he is one of the guys they trust the most. So it's understandable he's there, even if that's not somewhere I would put him longer term.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. We'll go back to the text line, or go to the text line, the people's text line, always open, in a sec. Joining us here on the phones, Brendan in Alberta calling in. Brendan, what's up?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to give a – well, you kind of stole the wind out of my sails there. Just – I was going to talk about Kirk and IKF, but I really like the kind of Whit Merrifield impression that our IKF is doing for us right now, being – kind of a all-around utility player, like shortstop, second base, third base. You put him anywhere in the infield, he's going to do a good job out there and give you a really professional at-bat. And I mean, a lot of flack has been thrown Alejandro Kirk's way, like you guys have said, but like I don't know, his defense to me hasn't slumped one bit behind the plate. Like, it's probably gotten even a little bit better this year than it was last year. Like, not just the throwing out runners, but the pitch framing, like that comeback two-seamer that Bassett was throwing back door to the righties today. Kirk absolutely frames that pitch perfectly to get the strike call. I think there was 2 called third strikes on those pitches. And, Bassett today as well. I mean, taking the pitch off the arm and just being a bulldog out there on the mound, like, was just insane. Like, I haven't seen resiliency like that out of a pitcher since probably Marco Estrada. Just a guy who didn't care what happened out there. He was going to go out there and give it his all every single time he pitched.
Hey, Brendan, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us on Jay's Talk. Yeah, you know what? We haven't talked about Bassett. That line drive from Judge, of all people, smoking that ball off his throwing arm. And then you can see, like, within seconds, you could see on the broadcast, even from up here, like, we're not that close. We have the TVs in the booth up here, but, like, you can't see, they're like little stick figures from where we are up here. And you can even see the redness on his arm, this gigantic welt, like, just forcing its way out of the meaty part of his arm. And, like, he was constantly flexing his fingers. And, like, Bassett, Nick, at the best of times, looks like someone who is generally irritated on the mound. Like, just when things are going perfectly for him, he looks like he is, like, on the verge of, like, snapping and having a mental breakdown. But that's just his way. Like, that's just his demeanor. It really works for him. He has kind of weaponized the pitch clock. He has weaponized the pitch clock in terms of how he kind of waits until the last, like, the nth second before he delivers a pitch. He has a bazillion pitches he can use, and he was great today. I got to say, like, I remember you were sitting right behind me here in the booth, and as soon as he took the pitch, I turned to you and I said, okay, we're going to have to fill here for a little bit if he comes out of this game, because no one's up in the pen. And he came back out, and I think, like, the batter he saw immediately was, I think it was Alex Verdugo, and he freezes him with, as Brendan was saying, with the sinker for a called strike three, and then he just carved the Yankees up. Like, he kept throwing the sinker pretty effectively. I love watching him throw the curve, especially when batters just, it's like they can't help themselves from not either swinging at it, or they think it's not going to be in the zone, then it is, and it's just another called strike. And the cutter was used a lot as well, so it's just watching him use that pitch mix to keep guys off balance is a real treat to watch. And Ben and Chris were talking about this on the air, and I'm curious to get your take on this, but they were talking about the idea that if his ERA continues to get lowered, because I think he entered this game around 3.30 ERA, if it continues to get lowered, like, we probably should be having more serious conversations about whether or not, maybe not as the all-star starter, but, like, being selected as an all-star pitcher, because he's been phenomenal.
Oh, he's been unbelievable. And for people who are just listening on the radio and haven't seen any visuals, like, you could see that welt from outer space. Yeah. It was incredible how, and it was instant as well. The fans also in the building really responded to the way he quickly went and tested it. Like, it's something that was really galvanizing in the park. Like, it was part of the energy, the resilience that he showed today. The most strikeouts he's had in a game since early April. April 9th was the last time he had 8 strikeouts in a game. A 1.47 ERA in his last 8 starts. Ooh. Now, yeah, he has been more than sort of the, it's easy to stereotype him as that, you know, the gamer, the guy who's smart and maybe not the most talented, not the highest velocity, but he understands it and he outthinks guys. But this is a guy who's, he's better than that right now. Like, he is performing like a top of the rotation sort of pitcher. And it could be interesting, you know, if things go poorly at the deadline, if he's someone that they think of taking calls on, because he's extremely effective right now. He's a playoff caliber starter, to be sure, and he's someone that would be welcomed into basically any rotation around baseball. He's been fantastic.
So 6 hits, 1 run, which was unearned, so no earned runs, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk over 6 innings pitched for Chris Bassitt, and he threw, let's see, 94 pitches, and 66 of them were strikes. That is truly incredible. Like, because, like, certainly he's always been very durable, pretty reliable. He goes pretty deep into ball games. There was that stretch, and I think his last 4 starts where he had an ERA of like 1.7 or whatever it was, and they didn't win any of those games for a variety of wild reasons. But I mean, just to see the whiff rate on so many of his pitches. I mean, the 4-seam fastball. I mean, he got 1 of 2 whiffs on 1 of 2. 4-seam fastballs, which, I mean, like, he doesn't throw a ton of 4-seam fastballs today. He of those 94 pitches, he threw 3 4-seam fastballs. But to watch him again with a curveball, 11 of those, 20 cutters, 36 sinkers, and then, you know, he mixes in a healthy amount of splitters, sweepers, sliders, changeups, etc. And but I still think one of my favorite sequences, let's say, Nick, from any Blue Jays pitcher we see, certainly, like, Gausman's splitter just dropping off the table, which, again, it hasn't done a lot of this year, but seeing that when it's really moving is one of my favorite pitches a Blue Jays pitcher throws. But really close, a really close second, honestly, is watching Bassitt force in a sinker or a 4-seam fastball in there to watch someone flail on it, and then the very next pitch is like a 69-mile-an-hour curveball. It's just wild to see what their reactions are.
Yeah, and the way he can lock up guys, too, because he's, you know, in this game, he threw 7 different pitches at least 5 times each.
Yeah.
You have no idea what you're going to see when you're standing up there. So whether it is that slow looping curveball that someone just looks at because they're thinking it's going to be the cutter or the sinker, whether it's the 2-seamer that comes back in on the inside corner, he just has these pitches that if all the other ones didn't exist, maybe they wouldn't be as hard to hit, but because there's so many things for an individual hitter to think about on any given pitch and any given count, sometimes they just give up on stuff, even if it would be hittable otherwise, because it's just totally beyond their expectations.
Yeah, he's one tough son of a be, you know? Like, he really is. Like, I got to say, I think you're right when it comes to describing the galvanizing moment that was the him getting hit by the pitch, and then basically seconds later going out to throw some warm-up pitches to Kirk, I thought was great, and then freezing Verdugo as the next out in that same inning. I thought it was just phenomenal stuff. So, hey, kudos to Bassett. And again, his ERA is now down to 3.24 on the season, and I guess his next start lines him up to pitch against the Astros in the next series between July 1st and 4th. So if that's the case, then I don't know, man. Like, if we get to the end of that start and he does another deep start and he's looking pretty good, I don't think there's, like, again, the Blue Jays' record might keep some of those guys out, but I think because there's two different aspects to how All-Stars are chosen, right? Like, there's the fan vote and how the finalists are affected with people all over the world voting for their guys for position players. But because the pitchers are all, even in the All-Star starter, because they're all chosen by, like, the players slash coaches, I kind of feel like there's a good chance Bassett might actually end up being, like, on the roster. Just because, and again, like, AL, maybe the record means that he'll have to compete with guys on teams that have better records, but if you're going purely by merit, he's got to be one of the top guys in consideration, I think.
So coming into this game, he had the 20th best ERA in the American League, which maybe doesn't sound super impressive. The guy directly above him was Nestor Cortez, so we're going to see a flip right there. You know, some of the guys above him are not above him by much. You know, Jose Berríos is not pitching as well as him. You could definitely see a flip there, you know, with the Blue Jays not having a ton of candidates, although Vladdy certainly changing that in recent weeks. He's someone that could definitely be in the mix for that. And again, you don't think of him as sort of the most glamorous player because, you know, he's got the nickname the Hound. Like you said, he's known for his toughness, resiliency, going deep into games more so than he's known for having this unbelievable talent level. But at a certain point, what matters is what you produce,
sure,
not what your talent level is.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Max in Toronto. Max, what's up?
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You hear
what's
me?
Up? Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's, you know, that's been going through some highs and some lows. And after that disaster last night, I do see this team. That I hope they can, you know, they can win the series. They didn't sweep them, but if they can win this series, hopefully there is going to be some positivity at the end of the tunnel going into the All-Star break. So after that, they can start over, and hopefully they'll be better than they were in the first half of the year.
Max, thanks for the call. Thanks for joining us on Jay's Talk. It's true. I mean, he's not wrong in that they're, like, the highs are, like, pretty high, Nick, and the lows are, oh, they're low. Like, they're real low, man. But, at least we got to see some of those highs today. And like I said, I mean, maybe I'm biased. I grew up a Jays fan, and I grew up in the city, and you kind of see what the vibe is like when the team is good. But also, like, even when they're really bad, even those black hole years with JP Ricciardi as GM and, like, the late 2000s, early 2010s, like, when things were, like, really dark, beating the Yankees is fun. Like, and I say this because we were here at the ballpark, and I feel like I'm not really a fan anymore. You know, I come here and we do our job, but I do get a warm, fuzzy feeling when I see everyone here having a good time. Because, like you said off the top, like, it's an entertainment product, and you want these people to have a good time, and they're paying their hard-earned money to come here. So to have them come here and watch Vladdy knock home six runs and IKF do his thing and Kirk and George Springer looks like he's turning around, which we can talk about. But that I think is nice because it's not a cheap proposition to come to ball games anymore, right? So I think it's nice for them to get something to cheer for.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people coming out of Friday's game felt exceedingly negative about the team. Like, it's easy when a team gets absolutely blown out to get very doomerist about it. And to be fair, the Blue Jays, even after today's win, are not in a strong competitive position. There's plenty to be negative about,
sure,
if that's what you really want to do. But it's, you know, momentum swings so quickly. Like, prior to Friday's disaster, frankly, it was a disaster, they had won two games by a massive margin in a row, and then they come out again on Saturday and win another game in a pretty impressive fashion here. And it just goes to show that, like, one game doesn't really carry into the next game, and the, you know, the roller coaster is inevitable. You don't necessarily need to sink into the low when there's one terrible game, and at the same time, I guess you don't necessarily have to get too high after one great game, but I'd kind of encourage people to do it because the whole point is to enjoy the ride here.
Let's see here. 590-590, name and location. I see a text here from Jen in Toronto. Jen, always appreciate the text. And she says, Some fun games. Little looks good. Much of offense is good apart from Varsho. Glad he got a hit. And Jansen and Davis, so glad for Bassett. Some players trade value increasing. What will Ross do? We are all not privy to Bo and Vlad's interests in re-signing. I still think it's likely something gets done with at least one of them, but probably not until the offseason. I know Bo had the comment the other day about, like, would you be surprised to be traded? And, like, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I would be surprised if he was traded, if only because I feel like those kinds of moves at the deadline for those kinds of players, like, don't often happen, you know what I mean? But does that necessarily mean no one's getting traded? No, if things continue, with a below 500 record and we're, like, at, you know, a month from now, would it be that surprising to see Kikuchi and Jansen and, you know, Jimmy Garcia and the other UFAs get traded? Like, probably not, right? But I would be surprised if they got traded. I actually think, I've said this all along, but I really do think that Vladdy, and I have no inside information on this, but just that Vladdy has always been so open and pretty, like, direct about wanting to resign here. And I think, again, it's not a small sample size of what Vladdy has done, Nick, but I still think you want to see it a little bit longer before you commit, like, several hundred million dollars to him. I mean, you can say that about anyone, though.
Yeah, it's going to be a big commitment. I think that with Bo, it's really hard to trade him because he's just not performed well. So when you're taking on someone like Bo, I mean, everyone knows he's incredibly talented and he's had a number of very strong seasons in a row. But I don't know, the rumor has been the Dodgers, so let's just take them as an example. If you're the Dodgers, you're going to have to pay a significant package, and you're going to get a player who's performing significantly below average offensively this year, and you're just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping it's going to turn around, and you only have him for one more year after that. Like, that's a bit of a difficult proposition. With Vladdy, if he continues hitting, maybe not this well, but extremely well through the deadline, then you think about it because you get something huge from him. But I think you're right. I think that he is probably the one that they want to build around from on-field stuff. The fact that he can be a middle-of-the-order hitter, as we've seen right now, and really drive a lineup. You know, this guy's 19 RBIs over the last six games. Like, it's a very valuable power hitter. But also just beyond that, in terms of, you know, marketing and branding the team, like, I think that Vladdy is a face of the franchise type of guy. He's someone that people glom onto. There's been a lot of criticism, especially last year when things didn't go particularly well for him. But I do think there's a lot of love for him as well, and I think that he's a face of the franchise type.
Got a clip here for you, Nick. John Schneider just finishing his media availability. And I was interested to hear what Schneider would say about this because, well, you know, you want to know if he's going to make his next start. Of course, this is about Chris Bassett and taking the Aaron Judge line drive off the forearm. And here's what Schneider has to say about any concerns that we might be awaiting.
Concerns were a lot at that point walking out there when you take a ball like that off your throwing arm. Chris has been through a lot on the mound before, and he was determined to not come out of the game. And I think after he threw a couple pitches, said he was good. And, you know, obviously Jose's out there to kind of clear that. But I didn't want him to do anything crazy and stupid. Chris is such a competitor and good teammate to where he wanted nothing more than to do what he did today. And you got to put yourself, you got to put your health first a little bit, you know, when something like that happens. So can't really speak enough about the determination, grit. That's it kind of sums him up, was what he did today.
That is John Schneider talking about Chris Bassett staying in the game after taking a line drive off the forearm. And you know what, I do admit I was concerned, like, he, not that he stayed in the game, but when he went to sit down, I kind of thought, well, you know what, like, there's probably some adrenaline pumping through your veins. Like, you want to stay in the game. You're facing all these batters. He kind of shared a look with Aaron Judge when Judge was standing at first base. Kind of wonder if they said anything to each other. Honestly, probably not, though. Judge seems like the most mild-mannered star you'll ever see, honestly, in any of these sports. But I got to say, I was more concerned when he went back and sat down. If, like, you know, you kind of, like, let it rest for a couple minutes and you're kind of feeling it. But, hey, he came back out and he pitched six innings and didn't allow more than one unearned run today, which is remarkable.
Yeah, and in the moment itself, and I think you could kind of hear that in John Schneider's voice when he was talking about kind of what that moment felt like, is the concern that he had. the thing that really stood out is that he didn't really react to the ball. The ball came off of his arm, and it's a ball that he potentially could have fielded or at least gone for, and he didn't really react to the ball at all. He was only reacting to his arm, and that made you feel like, oh, this is a nasty injury, because we know he's a gamer. We know he's the type of guy who wants to get that out if he possibly can. And so the fact that, you know, all of his attention was on the fact he seemed to be hurt seemed to indicate that he was going to be injured. And then next thing you know, he's throwing warm-up pitches and he's back in there. And as Schneider said, like, you know, he's a warrior, he's a gamer, however, whatever cliche you want to use, that applies to him. And it was a remarkable outing.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call if you want to share your opinion on what went down for the Blue Jays today, on Vladimir Guerrero Jr., on Bassett, on what the Jays should do next, on what they might do tomorrow, certainly as well. Gausman and Cole, the pitching matchup tomorrow, going to be a fun one here at the Rogers Center in the series finale. 590-590 is a text line as well. Those are all the myriad of ways for you to reach us here on Jays Talk. We're going to step aside, go back to the text line when we come back, and hear a little more from the skipper on the other side as well. Again, you're listening to Jays Talk Show, and Nick with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Just the player that he can be, really. You know, he's comfortable. He's taking really good swings. His at-bats are really consistent. You know, it's huge, you know, huge swing to get us on the board in the first. And then he's been really good for a few weeks now. You know, I know the home runs are there. RBIs are there. I don't know how he hit the last one off Ferguson. It looked like his dad a little bit, but when you're going good, you're going good. But he's comfortable and confident, and I think when you match that up with his skills, that's kind of what you're seeing.
That is John Schneider talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who, again, today, in a 9-3 win, knocked in six of those nine runs, including a home run. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network Show, and Nick here with you until the top of the hour. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call if you want to get in touch with us. 590-590, name and location is the text line. And again, the people's text line is always open. I see a text here from Ruben in Alberta, who does text pretty often. Ruben, I always appreciate it. And Ruben says, Nick, why on earth would anyone with anything to do with the Blue Jays want to get rid of or trade Vlad and or Bo? And I tend to agree, right? I mean, you do need, even if I think they're not like the biggest of superstars, there's like right this second, there's still some room for them to be superstars, which we talked about before, because they're still quite young. You made the very salient point that like when players hit free agency, as these guys are going to likely hit free agency at the end of next season, not this season, but next year, they're typically not this young, right? Like, they're typically, guys are typically like Pete Alonso, where they're 29, 30, or maybe honestly sometimes even older, right? Like, when these guys are hitting free agency and getting the opportunity, Nick, for major paydays. But let me tell you, Ruben, judging by the text on the text line, I'm not going to read them because I think they're kind of dumb, I'll be honest. But a lot of texts about, like, don't be fooled by Vladdy. He's like immature and he's an idiot and all these things. And it's just, I don't know. I just find it wild that even now there are still people, like, don't get me wrong. Like, is this going to be what Vladdy is like? Is he going to have like an 1100 OPS or whatever over a certain stretch for like his whole career? Probably not. Right. But at the same time, it's just, I don't know. It just seems like even after what we've seen for like the vast majority of the past month, that people are still like kind of like looking for reasons to find fault with him. I don't know, it's too much for me.
Yeah, I find the anti-Vladdy sentiment a bit puzzling. I know that last year he firmly did not reach expectations. Like, last year was a bad year by the standards of his talent. Now, for many players, it would have been a fine year, but considering how good we know he could be, last year was not a good level of production from him, and they needed more, and they were a competitive team. So I understand that friction there, where they really needed him to be a guy, and he wasn't quite that guy. But this year, you know, looking at the totals, he really kind of has been that guy, and especially recently, obviously in the last month or so, he's gotten more aggressive, the power has gone up. And, you know, you talk about why would they want to get rid of these guys. It's more about, can they keep both of them? Is that realistic? Do you want to make some kind of trade so you can get something before they walk out the door? I will say, imagine a world where they don't re-sign either of them. there's not a lot here to build around. You know what I mean? Like, this farm system is considered to be below average. Now, those rankings, you know, they can change. Yeah. Guys can emerge, yada, yada, yada. But there's not a lot of Blue Jays players who we know are going to be with this team in 3 years, in 4 years to build around. And these guys are young enough that you can sign them to big, long, long-term contracts and build around them, even if they're not the perfect superstars. And I think they'll be in real trouble if they don't re-sign at least one of these players, because they don't have much of a core beyond 2025, just based on where the players they have now are from a contractual standpoint.
We see a text here, 59590 says here, there's no name on this one, that's why I paused, but please leave your name and location just so we can give you a shout out. This one says, the fans expect Vladdy to be MVP every year. He's still fairly young, and also everyone's angry at how much the team has underachieved over the past few years. I do think that's true. I do think, like, the sentiment that we get on Jays Talk, text calls, on the pregame shows, on really any show on the network, really, I do think that is true, in that it's emblematic. Like, it just, maybe people just pick a guy to be mad at, essentially. And I still just find it bizarre that the guy that you're picking to be mad at is, like, effectively the team's best player. Like, you can be mad at, like, there are a lot of guys you can be mad at in a 26 player active roster. You're picking, like, the best player on the team, or like, at worst, like, what, the second best player on the team or whatever, right? Depending on how you view other guys. But it's just, I've always found that kind of bizarre. I don't know. I just, don't get me wrong. And I say this as someone who has, like, given, like, dealt out my fair share of criticism for Vladdy. Like, I have, right? It's just, there are things he has done in the past that I didn't really care for. But it just, in this moment, right now, I just find it hard to criticize him too much, even if he does do things you don't really love, like the base running error the other day. Yeah, it's dumb. I agree. I agree with that criticism. It's silly. But, like, on the whole, the positive largely, I would say, vastly outweighs the negative.
Yeah, I mean, the emotionality of it is understandable, and this team has underachieved its potential over the last few years, even when they've made the playoffs like they did last year. Yeah, yeah. And in 2022, like, there has been higher hopes for this team than they've been able to achieve. And so when that happens, you know, who are the players that people know? Yeah. Who are the faces of the team? Like, that's where a lot of the criticism is going to be. And I get they haven't actually really done, they haven't made it deep enough in the playoffs for people to even really say, oh, these guys didn't do anything in the playoffs, because the team didn't do anything in the playoffs. So it's not a situation where Vladdy's got hundreds and hundreds of playoff at-bats and he's never done anything with them. Like, that's another step.
Yeah,
we're not even there yet. But it's about expectations. Right? Like, think about IKF as an example, right? Like, IKF this year doing way better than we thought is sort of about at the level that bad Vladdy last year was at in terms of overall offensive production. But we're delighted because the bar is down here and the production is up here. And so when you get these star players or these really talented young players, the bar is really high and it's easy to come in under it and create this kind of unrest in the fan base.
I see 590, 590 name and location. I think this is Dale in Nova Scotia. Dale says, why do Vlad and Bo make so many base running mistakes? They continue to make them in 2024. It's true. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying they're perfect by any means, but, like, Bo did have it. There was a moment in the, I think it was the bottom of the fifth inning, Nick, where it was a tough base running moment for Bo that ultimately, I suppose, didn't matter because they won 9-3 anyways. But, I mean, in the moment, so he waits up to see if Grisham or Cabrera converge on the double. And because he waits in that moment, he's at second base, and he only gets to third on the play. And he was basically waiting at second base, right? And with one, so there was one out at that point, and it was a Kiermaier strikeout right before him. I feel like he could have made a better decision. Like, in that moment, with just one out, if there were two outs, you probably do what he did, right? But if there was one out, you probably could have been waiting on the base pads halfway, knowing that you could have gotten back to second had the guy caught the ball, Grisham or Cabrera, whoever it ended up being in right center there. But I do think, like, maybe I'm nitpicking a little bit with that, I do think, and I think it is another example of what Dale was talking about. And you can go back to the game the other night where Vladdy with the mad dash from third to home, and he gets caught by Trevino on the wild pitch at home plate. Like, yeah, like, they're not great. They're not great plays, but it's just, I don't know. I think there's been enough trade off that I would probably make that trade, at least for Vladdy. Bo's been a little tougher to forecast this year because of A, injuries, and B, underwhelming production.
Yeah, you're right about that play with Bichette today, because there's one out, it's a fly ball into center field, and the value of him, because what he's trying to do is make sure he's able to tag up and
yes,
potentially go to third base. But the value of him tagging up and going to third base when he'll get there and there'll be two outs, so you're not able to bring him in with a sack or with a ground ball in the infield or anything like that, it's not that valuable. The difference between second, third base in that situation isn't that valuable, so he should have gone more halfway, because then if the ball falls in, he can score. And that's not what happened. So that definitely was a mistake. Vladdy, as you point out, that was a mistake too. I'd put them in slightly different categories. I think Vladdy makes more mistakes than Bo does. Bo's had some ones in some big spots. I think that is kind of magnifies it. Overall, I think of him as sort of an average base runner, not really an asset, not really a problem.
Right.
Vladdy, the reality is that he hasn't been a good base runner, and you're right to an extent, because he's a veteran at this point. Like, he's played enough in the league that you would hope that he would quote-unquote learn from some of these mistakes. But he's an aggressive guy on the base paths, and he's not quite fast enough to make that approach work. Maybe there'll be an adjustment at some point, but it's a very small part of what he is as a player. So it's not what I would choose to fixate on. But I think, again, we talked about the sort of anti-Vladdy sentiment. When you're sort of already leaning in a direction of being against someone, that confirmation bias can come in, and you're like, ah, here's another reason to hate Vladdy. I get it. He's not a great base runner, but I wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
Yeah, I certainly will not be. That's for sure. Before we go, we've got a couple minutes left here, Nick. I wanted to get to the bullpen today because, you know, I think the biggest question mark for me is not like when Chad Green is coming into the game. And yes, you need more than just Chad Green in like high leverage spots. And, you know, you hope that Jimmy Garcia will come back soon. There's an update on Jordan Romano that, in case people hadn't heard, he was shut down after experiencing elbow discomfort while throwing yesterday. So the Jays say no structural damage in the elbow after imaging, but he will still be seeing Dr. Keith Meister on Tuesday in person, which, I mean, like, historically has not, you know, been great. But, you know, Tim Mazza was DFA'd today, and he, like, this is a guy who I think a lot of the Jays Talk faithful wanted to be gone, so you kind of get your wish here. But it does mean when it comes to the construction of the bullpen, when it comes to lefties, you effectively are only left with Cabrera and Little. And Little pitched today, and he actually looked pretty good. So he has been better as of late, especially in his last couple of outings. I've been relatively impressed. So maybe Little has that role of lefty specialist to a certain extent, and he can clearly go more than one inning, which I think is valuable as well, because this team doesn't have a lot of those guys. Are you comfortable with that? Like, if those are your lefty options, Little, Cabrera, and I suppose Trevor Richards as well. He's not really a lefty, but they pseudo use him as one.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd have to parse the definition of the word comfortable. when you think of this bullpen,
that's like, a Ross Atkins answer if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, I learned from the best. No, when you think of who are you really comfortable with in this bullpen, it's Chad Green, it's Trevor Richards, and that's it. Yeah. Now, Brendan Little, he's showing something. He's definitely an interesting arm. He's a former first-round pick. He's bounced around. He does have some length. The sinker is good. He's got some velocity on it, too. He did look good in this game. Like, when you think about this game, it was an opportunity to roll out those low-leverage guys, like the new guy, Jose Quas, because you're up big, and you're like, we only trust two guys. Let's try and find some more guys we can trust. And maybe Little is working his way up. Maybe Pop is working his way up. But there's a long way to go for these guys. This has been a very, very disappointing bullpen. Garcia has been the guy, and he's currently injured. We'll see when he comes back. You know, Romano's in difficulty. Swanson's in the minor leagues. They just got rid of Mazza. Like, it is a chaotic situation. And these are the type of games where you're up big or you're down big, where you bring guys in and you just take a look at them and see if you can move them into that circle of trust. But right now, the circle of trust is extremely narrow for this group.
Yeah, the circle of trust is like you said, it's literally Trevor Richards and Chad Green, and that's it. Like, I sometimes have made the distinction, Nick, that there's like an inner circle of trust, outer circle of trust. There's only one circle of trust right now, and those guys are the only ones in it. And again, I think there's a path for Brendan Little and Yenesis Cabrera to work their way into the maybe outer circle of trust if you want to like reestablish that part. But I do think it takes a little bit more. Having said that, Brendan Little, he throws a sinker, he throws a cutter. He also throws a knuckle curve, which I just feel like we don't like. In a general sense, with the fun factor, we don't see any pitchers throw knuckle curves all that much anymore.
Yeah, not a lot of Mike Mussina types out there anymore. Yeah, it's a weird mix, because normally with a curve, even a knuckle curve, it's going against the four seam fastball, kind of the vertically oriented pitches, top of the zone, bottom of the zone, and you get sinker. It's normally sinker slider. So seeing a guy with a sinker curveball is a weird mix. It's kind of like Aaron Sanchez, but from the left side of the plate. He is an interesting arm, but yeah, there's a difference between an interesting arm and someone that you can currently trust in big spots.
Before we go here, Nick, what are your expectations for Kevin Gausman tomorrow? I brought it up very briefly off the top, but I mean, this is a guy who I think a lot of the problems have been with the splitter, in the sense that the splitter's not splitting as much, right? And he needed to split more. And he has said before that if we knew why that was the case, we'd all be much more wealthier and much more successful. So what are your expectations in a pretty highly touted pitching matchup? The first time anyone here is going to get to see Gerrit Cole this year, because he didn't make his return from the IL that long ago. And then Gausman's kind of had his ups and downs as well.
Yeah, in theory, that should be a marquee pitching matchup, right? Two aces, two Cy Young-type candidates. But, you know, Gausman has had four bad outings in his last five. Maybe bad's a stretch, but mediocre to bad. And Cole hasn't been great since he's come back from injury. So I think we could potentially see more runs than you'd normally expect from your average Gausman-Cole matchup.
That's what awaits us tomorrow here at the Rogers Center. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown West Control Centers in Boucherville et Mercier, Quebec. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Michael Jose Collins, I'm Show. That does it for us. We are out of here. Nick and I are back after that premier pitching matchup tomorrow to put a bow on this series at the Dome. Blair and Barker are back for the whole Astros series starting on Canada Day. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.